James Jimenez is Executive Director for New Mexico Voices for Children. I want to thank you so much for joining us. The Legislative Finance Committee recently released their budget recommendations for this upcoming year. They had recommended for the new Early Childhood Education and Care Department for the upcoming fiscal year to allocate $390 million. I'd like to hear your thoughts on what you feel state lawmakers have recommended for this upcoming legislative session and fiscal year.
Thanks, Anthony. Appreciate the opportunity to talk to you again. Well, as always, you know, the legislative session will be exciting, and, you know, we're looking with optimism, really, to the recommendations that the governor made. And when you compare those, though, with what the Legislative Finance Committee recommended, particularly around early care and education programs for children in the state, you know, the LFC budget really comes lacking in our mind. It really doesn't provide the kind of support for our children and families that I think most people in the state would acknowledge that we need if we're going to continue to move this state forward.
Where specifically do you feel it falls short?
Yeah, well, one of the areas we'd point to was in child care assistance. The Legislative Finance Committee has been very critical of child care assistance programs in the past, and I think largely unfairly so. They've been evaluating them as education programs, but the problem with that is that we have not funded them as education programs. We've really funded them as what we would call a work support program, and if we're going to evaluate them as education programs, then we need to fund them appropriately, and the LFC budget clearly does not do that at this point in time. I think what the governor and the new secretary are trying to do is reconcile that difference between child care as a program where kids have a safe place to go while their parents are working or going to school, with child care being an integral part of our education system in preparing children for kindergarten. But we're not quite there yet. There's still a lot of work that needs to be done, and you know, I think that the governor and the new secretary are on the right track. Unfortunately, the LFC is not on the right track at this point in time.
Can you share with me any specific research that really leads you to this perspective?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we know clearly that brain development happens, about 80% of brain development happens in the first 3 years of a child's life. And if we're going to have a big impact on children's ability to be successful in school, we've really got to influence them, those children, early on in their lives. And it comes down to as simple as that we need to take advantage of the time when a child's brain is rapidly developing in positive ways so that we can ensure that when they do hit the schoolhouse doors in kindergarten, that they are ready to learn, and then there's a lot less remedial programs needed for children when they get to kindergarten, and so that our teachers really can spend the time doing the educational work that they need to be doing and less time dealing with remediation.
Okay, well, the committee did increase funding for home visiting services to new families to $3 million. Where do you think that number needs to be? And what type of services should that fund?
Yeah, we're very excited about the growth in state-funded home visiting programs over these last few years. And, you know, that's one of the areas that, you know, the private sector and the nonprofit sector have done a good job of demonstrating the efficacy of. And now I think that it's taken a while, but state government has come around to really being much more supportive of programs like home visiting. You know, ideally, home visiting services ought to be available to any family that wants them. That doesn't mean necessarily that the state government has to provide them, but they can be provided through the nonprofit sector or through state government. But in our mind, it really is important that all families have an opportunity to really learn what it means to raise young children. And we know so much more now than, you know, in the 50s and 60s, that we need to take advantage of how the science has advanced our knowledge on how we can better raise healthy children. So I think that the getting back to your specific question on home visiting, I think that they're moving in the right direction. And, you know, those programs do need to be phased in a responsible way. And, you know, we have less concern about the home visiting appropriation request than we do about child care assistance.
In regards to child care assistance, what do you think is really lacking from the conversation in regards to services and also funding?
Well, I think that there's a couple of things. One is that really making sure that we are compensating providers, and it really doesn't, at Voices for Children, it really doesn't matter to us who those providers are. It could be a private for-profit entity. It could be a private nonprofit entity. It could be a public institution. What really is necessary is that we think about and we adequately fund these entities to do what we call whole child development. That means that it's more than babysitting, and there's more than just sort of the educational or intellectual development of a child, but it's also the social and emotional programs that go along with that are necessary for children to grow up healthy. Right now, one of the major problems that we keep hearing about over and over again from private providers in particular is that they have to subsidize the cost of the infant and toddlers with rates that they charge 3- and 4-year-olds, and that just isn't right. I mean, we need to be funding these entities so that they can, each one of the programmatic offerings that they have can stand on its own 2 feet, and they can recognize that it's fully funded, and one age group shouldn't be subsidizing another age group.
How do you feel that this new department, Early Childhood Education and Care Department, can really give some sort of oversight on this issue in our state so that we're offering quality care in New Mexico at such an early age?
Yeah. Yeah, good question. And one of the things that we're really excited about is the new secretary, I think, comes to us with a huge, huge background and level of experience in helping to use data to really inform how programmatic offerings ought to be evaluated. And so we're really excited about the opportunities that are being presented by her and her, hopefully her new staff gets appointed fairly quickly here, to really help us evaluate that. But really, one of the things that they can best do is set uniform standards for all programs, whether they're being privately provided or publicly provided. And again, we have Voices, I think, would support the notion that we have to have a mixed system, meaning that there has to be a place for private, either for-profit or nonprofit providers, and there has to be a space for public providers like the public schools. But the new department then can set up and establish the new parameters, the new expectations, and the new regulations that will allow all of these programs to be successful and establish what the expected outcomes need to be, and then figure out, and working with them, figure out how do we evaluate them to ensure that we are going to achieve those standards.
Are there any other states that are really leading in this effort on this issue in early childhood education and care? Is the department looking at other states? Have you done any research and looked to see what may be working in other states in regards to this issue?
Well, you know, in a conversation recently with the new secretary, she pointed to some of the really interesting things that are going on in Washington, D.C., in their child care assistance programs. And, you know, her experience there was that she heard some of the same concerns that she's hearing here in New Mexico. And I think that the experience that she brings from watching the Washington, D.C. program roll out in a different kind of way of sort of, again, reconciling this tension between child care as what we call a work support and child care as an educational/developmental program, I think is going to be really valuable to us. But most specifically, you know, I'd point to Washington, D.C., what they've done. I think that there are some southern states like Minnesota that have shown some real positive efforts in establishing a new and different kind of child care assistance program for their states.
So in order to really offer quality education at such a young age, an education and care, you have to have the right staff and educators in place as well. How do you feel the last legislative session did as far as moving towards that? And right now, what are your concerns in 2020 looking forward in regards to really having a trained and qualified staff to carry this out?
Yeah, we really haven't reconciled that issue yet. And one of that's one of the major differences right now is the concerns that we hear from private providers all the time is they can't keep good staff because the public schools, for example, if they're in a community where a person has an opportunity to either work for the public school in an early care program or a private provider, that oftentimes the public schools can offer much better benefits and a salary than the private providers can, and we need to fix that. I mean, if we really value children like we say we do, then we need to value the people that are providing those basic services, and it shouldn't matter if they work for a public school or a private provider. The private providers need to be able to provide competitive salaries so that they are not training young men and women to do this kind of work and then just to lose them to another employer because that employer can pay better salaries or provide better benefits. That, I think, is going to be a major effort going forward. And it gets back to the amount of dollars that are being provided to these centers and then providing an accountability mechanism to make sure that those dollars really are going to pay the salaries and allowing the private centers to keep their qualified staff.
We've been talking about this new early childhood education and care department and the possibilities with it in regards to how it can make an impact on early childhood care and education. How do you feel the process has been going so far in regards to setting that department up?
It's been a little slow. I think everyone would acknowledge that. You know, it took an extended period of time for the governor to find the person that she was most comfortable with. As I said earlier, I think that she made an outstanding choice. I think Elizabeth Groginski is going to prove to be a really, really valuable asset in helping the department get established. It has taken too much time, I think, to get her the staff that she needs, but hopefully they're making progress in that. But I'm cautiously optimistic that come July 1st that we will see the department begin to operate the programs and not just be in a phase where they're trying to put the department together. There's still some of that that's going to have to happen, but hopefully they're just about ready to, by July 1st, rather, they'll be ready to really make the department operational and then start doing the transfers of employees and dollars and getting clarity around the program administration aspects of it.
Now, you addressed one of the issues with early childhood care and education in regards to having a qualified staff. There's obviously been some issues with keeping staff due to pay in the state. But in parts of the state, especially rural areas, there's been a lack of just overall childhood care. So I'd like to hear kind of your perspective on what you feel lawmakers and policymakers need to consider with addressing this issue.
Yeah, that you're exactly right. In some of the rural areas, it probably is not economically viable for a private provider to exist, and that then kind of leaves us asking then, well, who is going to provide that? And it probably needs to be the public schools. That would be one option. A second option would be to figure out whether or not there is a way of establishing home care with standards that are consistent with the needs of the more established centers or the public schools themselves. That, of course, would be a much bigger lift and requires a lot of really careful thinking about it. But it probably is going to entail some kind of combination of those things. And frankly, I think not all parents are going to want to put their children either in a large private center or in the public school setting, and therefore we need to be flexible enough to be able to support those parents too. That maybe want to do it themselves, but then make sure that they have access to the resources to help understand what healthy child development means and to be able to do that as a parent.
If you're joining us, we're talking with James Jimenez, Executive Director for New Mexico Voices for Children. Mr. Jimenez, also one thing I wanted to address with you in regards to the legislative session, your organization has been outspoken in regards to the issue of paid sick leave in the state for workers. I'd like to hear your thoughts on how you feel that is being addressed currently in New Mexico.
Well, you know, currently it's done, you know, if you, you know, it's a responsibility of the employers, largely. We saw that, you know, the governor just recently made an announcement on parental leave, which is subtly different than paid sick leave, but... you know, when we think about healthy families and healthy workplaces, I think we need to figure out a way of providing the structure for all workers, irrespective of whether or not they work for at home or they work for a small business that, you know, may not be able to afford same kinds of policies that our governmental entities can afford. We haven't done a good job yet of figuring out what is the best way that we can support families when, you know, parents themselves are sick or their children are sick and someone needs to stay home with them. And too many families really struggle because sometimes they just, you know, they frankly can lose their jobs if they have to stay home for an extended period of time with a sick child. So it's really problematic right now, and I think it does call for a statewide solution that can address the needed relief of small businesses as well as understand what it is that larger businesses can provide.
Mr. Jimenez, if I may just ask you about one more issue your organization has been vocal about, and that is funding higher education. What are your thoughts on where the state is right now on that?
Well, we know that for a decade, higher ed really took the brunt of a lot of the budget cuts in our state. And if you look at the comparison nationally, we cut higher ed more than most other states did over the period of the recession. And frankly, we're still very, very slow to recover from that. I think, you know, now that our state general fund is in a better place, this in 2019, the governor and legislature put together a better budget for higher ed. We're really excited about the governor's proposal for free tuition. I understand that there are some concerns about issues like whether or not that is a first dollar proposal or a last dollar proposal, and we agree that those things need to be reconciled. And I think one of the other things that we're excited about is if we can get the tuition paid for through a program like the governor has proposed, then is there other ways then that we can support the other costs that of going to institutions of higher education, like transportation, like childcare, like food, all those other expenses that are not covered, even if someone has their tuition paid for.
James Jimenez is Executive Director for New Mexico Voices for Children. Mr. Jimenez, thank you so much for joining us.
It's always a pleasure. Thank you.